Welcome to episode 40 of the Band of Gamers podcast. My name is Greylock, 3491, and this week I'm joined by DBQ Hams.
It is Oculus launch day.
Osiris Prime.
Hello, hello. Hey, it's still kind of light outside, so hey.
I don't know where he lives. And Zeus Adamus.
Free space.
It is not even close to being laid out here, Prime, but I envy you, really do. Well, hey, it's great to have everybody back together, and as we do every week, let's go over what we've been playing. Prime, why don't you go ahead and lead the charge here on what you've been playing, and I'm quite interested in Ark. There's been a lot of controversy about that game. And I also saw you came in first place in one of your Blops matches, so you have the floor. Go ahead, take it away.
All right, yeah, so I got quite a few things here, and actually, surprisingly, I missed the last podcast, but this is all I've been the past week, that I played all this. So, so I've been playing Ark and Black Ops 3, kind of my usual thing. I'm going to talk about the Ark controversy here in a little bit here in the news, during the news section. Ark and a little bit of Ark, how am I going to put this lightly since this is a family show? I got a little PO'd, let's say, with Ark the other day just because some things happened with some of my dinosaurs that I had tamed and the game kind of messed up and kind of glitched out. So they didn't die from the glitch, but I think kind of because of that, I wasn't able to save them. So I kind of put that down for a little bit and I was just playing mostly Black Ops this past weekend. And yes, I did get first place in one of my matches, which is, I don't want to say it's rare, but kind of the score that I had was, that's rare. It was like 30 kills. It was a team death match. It was like 30 kills and 8 deaths or something like that. So that's pretty rare for me. So I had to take a screenshot of that and post it on my activity feed. But other than those two, play a little bit of Smash Brothers, Super Smash Brothers, and Mario Maker on the Wii U. I haven't touched Smash Brothers and I don't know how long. I actually went the weekend before I had went to the Chicago Comic Cons that happens during the year, C2E2, and they had a fairly decent sized gaming section actually, where they just had sponsored by Mountain Dew, surprise surprise, but they just had all kinds of consoles, new consoles, old consoles, just everything kind of on a section of the floor where you could just, you know, go up to it and start playing, you know, whatever, as long as the seat was open. So that was cool, and I didn't actually play Smash Brothers then, but my son was, so I was kind of watching him play, and, you know, I hadn't played for a long time, so then this weekend we kind of booted that up, and we were both kind of playing, going at it, so that was fun. And then jumped in Mario Maker actually before we started playing that, because I hadn't played that in a long time either, and there was some new content that dropped. I think just some more tools for the to make levels and stuff like that. So that was fun. So I played that with my son and just by myself later on after he went to bed. So that was cool. And then a couple of like totally new things that I've played is Dark Souls, which actually both of these next two games are the backwards compatibility from the 360 on the Xbox One. Dark Souls, which I had never played before. I probably played maybe about 20, 30 minutes or so. So yeah, it's as hard as people say. I was kind of lost at first, but I was able to kind of power through some of the enemies, and I think I got killed on one of the bosses, which is pretty much when I stopped playing, just because I wanted to jump on some of the other games that I'll mention here. It's a pretty cool game. I mean, I like it. I know a lot of people were saying, because this came out around the same time I think Skyrim came out. And a lot of people were kind of more into this than Skyrim, but as good as it is, I'd pick Skyrim over this any day. So, but still a good game. I definitely would recommend it to people if they want to try it out. It is, like I said, it's pretty hard, so you're going to die a lot, and I did. So, the last game I played, Supreme Commander 2, which is, once again, another 360 backwards compat game. Really liked this game, actually. I never played this one, or I'm assuming there was a 1 since this is number 2. It's an RTS in the vein of like Red Alert, Command & Conquer, Red Alert, and those types of games. But it really reminded me of Red Alert. Controls, they're okay, I guess. I went through the tutorial, and then I went through the first couple of levels just in the campaign. And it's kind of a learning curve, I guess, just because I'm used to the keyboard and mouse with Command and Conquer. But I was able to kind of figure everything out, and I actually played it. I played it the tutorial, like a couple of the tutorials, last weekend, just for like whatever 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes, and then I kind of dive deeper into it. Excuse me, this past weekend, and yeah, I really liked it. It was really cool. Graphics, you know, they're good for a 360 game, I guess. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing this weekend and week. Any questions on anything, guys?
I've got several.
Okay, go ahead.
First question on C2E2. A bit off topic, but you didn't happen to meet or talk to any of the cast of Supergirl while you were there, did you?
No, I didn't see any. I didn't see either of them. I think there was the main character, and I'm not sure who the other woman was that was there. But no, I didn't see. Actually, I didn't really see any stars other than I forgot this guy's name now on the show. He's the Asian guy on Comic Book Men. If you've ever watched that before, he was the only star. I'm doing that in quotes that I saw. But yeah, but I didn't see any of the Supergirl cast, unfortunately.
Okay. Oh, and the other lady who was there was Kyler Lay, who plays Alex, Supergirl's sister, on the show. There were a bunch of other stars there that I want to meet, too. I always keep an eye on C2E2 because I was supposed to go, was it last year? The year before. I was supposed to go in 2014, and I wound up having to cancel my plane tickets and everything because of work. And my sister-in-law lived there at the time, so I was going to have a free place to stay. They have since moved, so I'll probably never get a chance to go. Sigh. The other thing I wanted to ask you was, and you talked about it a little, but Supreme Commander 2, or SUPCOM, as some call it, how, could you go into a little more detail on how well it played with a 360 controller? Because I've just never bought into the concept of an RTS on a console.
Yeah, this is the second one that I've played, RTS. I played a little bit of Halo Wars, and that seemed fine at the time when I played it. And to be honest with you, I can't really remember too much of Halo Wars. But this one, yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's different. So, like, say you can just pick, you know, a random one person or tank or whatever at a time. Just press A on that, you know, that tank or person. And if you want to do, if you say you want to do one of the tanks and you want to do like the whole group of tanks, if there's like more than one, you just kind of hold down A on that one specific, you know, tank or whatever, and it'll just pick all of them. So it's kind of cool. I mean, that's kind of intuitive, I guess. And then just some of the other controllers, you like hold down some of the shoulder buttons to get more options and stuff like that. Other than, you know, obviously on the keyboard, you just kind of have them laid out on the keyboard, which is kind of nice. But here you got, you know, you hold the one button and it just brings up more options and kind of like stuff like that. For the most part, like building stuff, it was all the same controls. You press Y, and it brings up a little kind of wheel that, you know, has your different options and you can pick. So it actually wasn't too bad, I guess. But just, you know, like I said, coming from keyboard mouse, it's just, you know, kind of different. It takes a little while to get used to that kind of control scheme.
Yeah. So was there a method for you to select like combined arms groups? Like, could you build So in most RTSs on a PC, you know, you can drag your mouse and multi-select a bunch of units at once, and then usually you hit control and a number, and that assigns a special group, and then whenever you want to select that group, then you just press that number key. Were you able to do something that complex in the game?
As far as I could tell, no. You can like assign a group of squad or whatever, you know, a group of soldiers and tanks to like another key, as far as I could tell. You could, like I said, with A, you pick, you know, all the same characters, and I think it's like X maybe. As long as, you know, they're kind of grouped together, you can just, you know, pick everything within that circle that pops up when you hold down X, and it kind of, you know, groups them all together. But as far as like, you know, hotkeying it to some other key, I don't think you could do that. I haven't really delved too deep into it, so I don't know. Maybe you can, but I'm going to assume probably not.
Okay, cool. I'm done. Over to anybody who's got another question.
So I've got a Mario Maker question. Did you notice... So one of the things that they did in the most recent update is that they added checkpoints. They did things with keys. They did bosses. Did you play any levels or play around with any of those tools that make use of that?
I didn't play any like pre-made ones like that, and I just kind of jumped on it real quick, and then I let my son play for the most part, so I didn't really go into the map making part of it all too much. I know when he was playing, he like, you know how you like kind of shake the guy and it changes stuff. You know, he kind of brought out the key at one point. He's like, "Ooh, what's that?" But I didn't really go into it too much.
Cool. Yeah, maybe I'll have to putz around with it and come back and give an update. But yeah, the 10 level or the 100 level challenge is always an interesting way to see what new people are using the tools for. So.
Yeah, I just jumped into a couple of the. You kind of get like the notifications of when like the pre-made stuff is made, and I don't know if they're like official maps or whatever. I played a couple of those, but I didn't see any kind of bosses or any of the doors with the keys and stuff like that. So
your son is still relatively young. So how does he like the interface? I mean, does he feel empowered to make stuff, or is he just kind of playing with the characters like they're stickers?
Well, let me just say this. If you tried any of his levels, you'd probably die like within the first 2 seconds. So he kind of just, you know, scatters enemies around, and he kind of gets, you know, like who's the enemy and who's not, and, you know, the different kind of mechanics of the different items, kind of like, you know, the one of those big blocks called the thwomps or whatever. You know, obviously if you put that down, you get near it, you know, it's going to stomp down on you. So he kind of gets it, but I think for the most part, he kind of just kind of screws around, you know, with it. But, you know, I think he's slowly starting to learn, you know, oh, you know, like I said with the thwomp, you know, this is a special thing. So I'm going to put it, you know, here or there. So I think he's starting to kind of get it.
Cool. I think that's great. I mean, I think, you know, things like Mario Maker or Minecraft or, you know, other tool sets that allow people, you know, young kids to be able to kind of experiment and express themselves in a game is a neat thing. So cool.
And he does, when he is playing, I've watched him, and he tends to look down at the pad more than he's actually looking at the TV when he's creating stuff. So, I don't know. I thought that was kind of weird, because I'm always just looking at the TV. I find it easier, probably just because of my old eyes. DB, you want to go ahead and tell us what you've been playing?
Sure, yeah. So I have been playing a little bit of Nintendo-related properties as well. So my son, who's a little older than Prime's son, we played some Pokken, the Pokemon Tekken cross fighter game where you're, you know, Lucha Libre Pikachu versus Ghost Pokemon. And yeah, it was a fun Saturday morning. You know, it's a pretty, you know, as Prime's talking about Smash Brothers, you know, Pokken is very much a Tekken type of combo based, you know, that certain controller moves are going to execute certain combos or heavy light attacks, you know, that you've got projectile attacks. You know, he beat me 5 times in a row, and he had gone through the training, and I just kind of button mashed. So there's definitely some depth to it. But it's interesting because it starts off kind of like a 3D fighting game like Tekken, and then at some point after you've hit enough combos on your enemy, it does what's called like a phase shift, which then brings it into just kind of a 2D plane, so you can't really escape, and so you're blocking or you're getting your direct combos in, and so then it kind of changes and turns a little bit more into almost like a Street Fighter in terms of that flat plane. It's pretty interesting. I mean, the graphics look really nice on the Wii U. At the same time, you know, my other son, who's been marathoning through mainstream Pokemon games for the last couple of months now, was very disappointed about the roster. All right, it's for a Pokemon universe that has 600 or 700, or somebody will correct me at some point, I'm sure. Monsters that I think there's only like maybe 16, maybe 19 after you've unlocked everything. It's not a very huge roster, and so I'm sure, you know, and maybe that's DLC coming. I would also think there's got to be a massive amount of balance issues that would go into that, But it was fun. But at the same time, my son was very happy to bring the rental back and not have to play it again and go back to Smash Brothers. So it was an interesting experiment. I think if people, you know, if for kids who or adults that like Pokemon that want something a little more, have a little more depth, it's something there. Controls well, looks nice, but at the same time, it may be, maybe it was too deep for my Smash Brothers son and not deep enough for my Pokemon loving son. So maybe by the fact that it straddles everything, it doesn't do anything all that special. At the same time, I've had some more fun with Disney Infinity Marvel Battlegrounds, which is that Power Stone kind of battler with the Toys to Life. Talked a little bit about that last week. Prime, you weren't here to enjoy that, but it's a fun game. It's a good kind of father-son game. So, but, you know, I think the one thing that we did notice is that you have to rescan all your characters every single time. So we have a whole bunch of Toys to Life Marvel characters, because as Zeus is just talking about, watching cons, you know, I'm very much a comic fan, and so I have a good collection of that, but I have to end up kind of collecting and rescanning them all back in each time rather than just doing it once and having it save it. I suppose they do it for the sake of not having everybody bring over theirs and, you know, actually having to own them. But so, yeah, so a little bit of fighting. But before I get off my fighting games, Zeus, you had a question about, or who had, did anybody have a question about Pokédex?
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, just a couple quick questions. So are the, I only kind of looked at this game a little bit, so are most of the characters or all the characters, are they more like humanoid type, or are they like kind of different? You know, I know there's some pretty weird characters in Pokemon, so I guess that's my first question.
So there, some are very much kind of humanoid finger, you know, styles, like Lucario, which stands on two legs. But at the same time, there's like a tiger-like one, and there's a chandelier that shoots projectiles. So there's a ghost Pokemon. I mean, so it is not the Mortal Kombat X alien that just looks like a human in an alien costume type of DLC. That's actually, you know, they're modeled in a very, I guess, true-ish Pokemon-like type of way.
Okay, cool. And then I guess you kind of answered the second question. There's special attacks then? Because I know with Tekken, it's mostly kind of just, you know, punching and kicking and stuff like that. Not like Street Fighter where there's like fireballs and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of different projectiles or kind of ranged attacks. There's some area attacks in addition to some type of punching and kicking. And again, maybe it's by necessity when something doesn't really have technically arms to punch with, then maybe you end up having to do some type of area attack that's your short range attack.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was actually thinking of picking this one up, so maybe I will. We'll see. This was another one that I saw at C2E2, but there was always a huge crowd around it, so I just didn't get a chance to try it out.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, if you have enjoyed Tekken before and you want a fighting game to, you know, putz around with your son, or that you can play in front of your son, you know, it's certainly, there is some depth there. There's an online mode, so the single player, the multiplayer kind of couch multiplayer works nice because one's playing on the gamepad and the other one's playing on the TV, so it keeps it up, and I didn't notice anything too bad in terms of frame rate. So, but other than cartoony fighting games, I have let The Division sit on the shelf, and so I have been looking for loot replacement games. And like Prime, who was playing Supreme Commander because it was free and backwards compatible, I picked up a couple other free games that have been sitting on my hard drive from Xbox Games with Gold for the last couple months, and trying to scratch that loot grindy type of itch. So played a little bit of the original Borderlands, which is still fun. And years later, I remember the layout in terms of where enemies are coming from and things like that. So that was fun. And played a little bit of, actually played quite a bit of both the Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing and Dungeon Siege 3. The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing is an action RPG kind of in the vein of Diablo, set in kind of that Van Helsing monster hunter type of steampunky world. There's a couple different action RPG computer games out about it, and I've played those a little bit. This one looks nice, but it's also, it seems to control kind of slow. I mean, there's a lot of layers in its interface with different characters. You've got like a spectral kind of ghost character that follows with you that helps attack. So there's some different types of combos that you can do with it, but it was pretty also easy to put down and not care too much about. But what I did find myself playing a good amount of was Dungeon Siege 3, right? And that's a relatively old game. I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but I do want to say that, you know, it's Obsidian. It's Obsidian from back in the Dungeons and Dragons, Baldur's Gate. What else do we have Obsidian to thank for? We've got Knights of the Old Republic 2, Fallout, New Vegas, even the South Park game is an Obsidian story. So that's kind of hooking me there. But in terms of an action RPG, it still plays out kind of like what you would expect it to in terms of that Diablo type of thing. So, Zeus, you had a question?
Yeah, so I missed it. What platform are you playing Van Helsing on?
So the Incredible Adventures was a free Xbox Games with Gold. There's been a couple other Van Helsings over the last couple years that have been PC, which I have through the Humble Bundle and have played, I don't know, a couple years ago. They all kind of play out that same way. The most recent one just came out at the, like, November, October of this past fall. So it looks really nice, but it's... It plays a little bit... I guess the action isn't super fast, right? Where I'm used to a Diablo where enemies are coming at you fast and furious, and so it's the pacing is a little bit slower here.
Yeah, I would check it out on PC. I played the original. It's one of my favorite action RPGs of all time. It's an absolutely awesome game. Like I ordered a custom iPad case with Van Helsing on it because I just think that game is like super, super awesome. And I didn't experience, I didn't feel like it was super slow on PC, but that was just me. And then Dungeon Siege, I didn't even know there was a third one. I see it now, yeah, developed by Obsidian, because the first two were done by Gas Powered Games, and that, I'm pretty sure that's a Chris Taylor game, so the original at least, who of Wing Commander fame and now doing Star Citizen, and I think... After this, he did a Star Siege, which wasn't as popular, because that was gonna. I guess he was gonna do Dungeon Siege, Star Siege, and one other one was gonna kind of be his trifecta of games. But I'm a huge fan of the Dungeon Siege games as well, because I love the leveling up your character based on what you do. So if you use melee a lot, then your character will become very proficient at melee. So you can have a fighter, but at some point in your career, you can switch and start using magic a lot and make them more magic proficient. So I had a great time with Dungeon Siege 1, which I finished, and I played through most of Dungeon Siege 2.
Zeus, you're taking me back to, like, 2003. I loved the original Dungeon Siege. You're right. It's a Chris Taylor game. Chris Taylor also was Total Annihilation, right? And so Supreme Commander falls into that as well. It's all that gas-powered games pieces. Yes, the
exactly.
Original Dungeon Siege, I completely agree with you. I love that game. I didn't finish it, but I played a good couple dozen hours on it, and the idea of, which was relatively new at the time, the idea that you were building your character based on whatever you attacked more. I think I ended up starting multiple characters just for the sake of of trying out different builds and playing around with it. And I loved the world building that went on there in terms of all those books that you would find, you know, scattered throughout. So, yeah, no, it's the Dungeon Siege 3, I hadn't really played much of it or thought about it because it just kind of fit into that same Me Too also ran action RPG, but Obsidian does a good job with the story, and I know that I have one of the Van Helsings sitting on my Humble Bundle account, so now you've given me something to try, and I'll have a chance to report back next week. How about you, Zeus? Yeah, what have you been playing?
I was just going to say, let's not talk about the Dungeon Siege movie, though, because that was horrible.
Was that an Ooey Bowl joint, or...
yep, exactly.
Yeah, well, then anything after that, yes, we don't need to talk about it at all. I even remember playing the PSP Dungeon Siege game, which was actually a nice little hack and slash on the PSP. So, yes, I have some good memories and some goodwill toward that series.
Yeah, I've got good memories because there was a point when I was held up in Italy, couldn't get back to home base, so I had to hold up in Naples for a while, and three of the games that I played through to completion then were the original Call of Duty for PC, Max Payne, and Dungeon Siege. So it was pretty awesome just for a few days just hacking away at some PC games. For me, recently, I have been playing Free Space 2, which I got from Good Old Games. It's a prized snag. If anybody ever played this game before or loves Space Sims, I would definitely check it out on Good Old Games because, I used to try and find this game, and the only place I could find it before GOG got it was, like, on Amazon, as a disc-based game, sometimes on eBay, and, like, disc-based copies of Free Space 2 go for, like, over $100-$150. It's ridiculous. And then GOG got it, and I think I bought it for $10. So, it's an excellent game. Stars Robert Loggia and Ronnie Cox doing some of the voice acting. It's just great being in space, awesome radio chatter, and really cool. I posted a nostalgia reel of, like, a 35-minute gameplay session on the site. Just having a blast. I played it with my Cytec X45 flight control system hooked up, so had a great time because gaming is always more fun with peripherals. And then tonight, right before the podcast, I was finally getting around to playing Metro 2033. That's a first-person shooter I've had for a very long time. It's pretty popular on Steam, and it's got a sequel, at least one or two sequels, and you can get it in a bundle with all the games and the expansion packs. Plays really well. I played the first intro scene, which starts you, just like Dark Arisen, starts you at the end of the campaign, so you have weapons and some decent gear. And it just yanked me back to 8 days before. So I'm hoping that I don't start off with, like, nothing but a sword. But we'll see how that goes. And then... that's all the gaming I've gotten done. The rest of the time, I have been rearranging my computer lab. So every quarter, I kind of move all my workstations around and just try different setups. So tonight, I'm broadcasting from the Lenovo Y50, which is one of my gaming laptops, and I've got it hooked up to one of the 32-inch TVs that I mentioned a couple months ago that I procured as my new large-screen monitor. So I'll be experimenting with different gear and different setups for the next few months in gaming and other stuff, as I always do. Anybody got any questions on any of those? Or Gray, do you want to take it away?
So can I go back and ask a question, Zeus? So is Metro 2033, is that that's the first one, right? It's not Last Light. This is the one where bullets are currency. Is that correct?
I don't know. I haven't even gotten exposed to that much of the game, but it is the first one. And I don't know, is Last Light the sequel, or is Last Light, like, a revised version with some extra content of 2033?
So Last Light is a separate game. I don't know if it's a direct sequel, or if it's another game set in that universe after the first game. But I do know you know, it's based on what? Is it a Polish? No, that's Witcher. It's a Russian. It's set in Russia, right? And there's a novel that it was originally based on.
I'm not sure about the novel, but it is based in Russia. It plays and feels a lot like Stalker, but it seems like it's a little faster gameplay than Stalker is. Stalker's a fun game, but it is a very plodding, methodical game. You don't run around and hack and slash. You need to be very careful about moving around the environment. It's actually one of those games I feel like has a little bit of friction in starting and getting into. I feel like I need to set aside more time. Whereas I feel like Metro 2033 is kind of a drop-in and play game. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it is. It's a Russian. It was based on a novel, Metro by Dmitry Glukhovsky, who was a Russian writer and journalist. There's also a sequel to it, Metro 2034. So I know I own the first one on Kindle, and I have started it one plane ride. But yeah, I'll be curious to hear how the world builds out.
Yeah, no doubt. And I do have Metro 23 and Metro Last Light. So I think there is one other game in the series that I don't have yet. So what about you, Gray? What have you been playing?
Well, I'm just glad to hear that my copy of Free Space 2 is worth $100. That's good news. Myself, I started the week by doing the crazy Destiny Xur weapon chase, or strange coin chase, because Xur had this, like, it's like the, how do they explain it? It's the icebreaker of shotguns that he had, second year weapon. I'm like, I gotta have that. I love the icebreaker. So I jumped a bunch of hoops with multiple characters to get enough coins to buy that, and now I have it. Kind of anticlimactical. And then joined with some friends. My brother, I sent my brother the extra copy of the game I had, and Spiral, Mace, and I have been going through the story all over again. And we did the Black Garden, and it was so much fun because I had hit level 20. Right before going into the Black Garden, so I was able to bring out my year one MIDI multi-tool. I was able to bring out my icebreaker, my Soros regime, all my great weapons from year one that required you to be level 20, and use them in that final chapter. So that was a lot of fun too. Also, played some Division. I hopped on Saturday and Sunday just kind of randomly throughout the day. And took a new track on, or a new tack on playing the game. I decided to clear each section of the city one by one, just because I just felt like everything was so random, you know, trying to go and figure out which mission was next. So I just said, okay, this first area of the city is from like level 3 to 7. I'll clear out all the missions in there, and then I'll go to the next one, which was like 5 to 10 or whatever. And clear out all those missions. And a couple times I was playing, I had friends just drop in and help me, which was awesome. And they dropped in at, they were lower levels than me, because they had a really, really high level character. They didn't want to bring it, because that would unbalance the gameplay. But they jumped in, and I didn't really feel like they were at a huge disadvantage. I was reviving them more than they were reviving me. But some of the perks you get with the way you can heal people quickly and throw down a med pack and whatnot really helped out. So I had a lot of fun doing that. Really did. Just had a lot of fun going around the city and, you know, picking up phones, listening to conversations, and just talking with my friends while I was doing that. So a lot of fun doing that. And then I was hanging out with my grandson, who's turning 6 here this week. And he wanted to play something. He had been playing Lego Star Wars. I picked up the Humble Bundle. Thanks to DB, and I think it was DB who posted it, and so I picked that up, a copy for each of my grandkids, and he had played Star Wars Legos. He must finish the game, because he had played for, I don't know, 3 hours straight, and then he said, let's play something else. So we fired up the, I was looking at my Star Wars games, most of them are for the original Xbox, so we found that Jedi Starfighter had a good co-op, so we played that for a little while. And then Mom came home, and he had to go away, but definitely looked like we may jump back up on that again, except we don't have wireless controllers, so that was a little awkward. But that's kind of my playlist for the week. So nothing too crazy there. And if you guys don't have anything else, we're going to go right into our first break with community news. So this week on the community news section, we have first up is the Car Club top 5 video for 527 is posted on YouTube. Just search for Solo Racer X. I don't know about you guys, but I had a hard time picking my top clip from the Car Club's race yesterday. And I ended up picking number 1 again. I thought I was going to pick number 5, and you know, just watching these guys play fours, it makes me want to play it again. What a beautiful game. Next on the list is congratulations from the CAG site go out to Mr. Bobo421, who was the member of the week, and displacing our very own DBQ Hams. Mr. Bobo got more likes than anybody else for his posts and content he put on casual.gamers.com, so wanted to send out a warm congratulations to him on that. And then finally, the last item in this week's community news is just a reminder. Did you know bandofgamers.net has its own Twitter account? That's bandofgamersnet, no dot, is our Twitter name. And we also have our very own Facebook, /bandofgamers.net. So facebook.com/bandofgamers.net. Or you can just search on Band of Gamers. And it was the first result. So if you want to know when a new episode of the podcast is released, I know we're not always releasing them exactly at the same time every time. But, you know, follow us on Twitter or Facebook, and then you'll know. Because when we post it on our website, it automatically goes to Twitter and Facebook. And for some reason, it doesn't go to our Google Plus page, which I have yet to figure out. But or it goes there as private. So yeah, we may fix that in the future. But for now, you can get us on Twitter, Facebook, and of course on our website, bandofgamers.net. And as I said last week, you can get us on iTunes and on Android as well. So that's it for this week's community news. And now let's roll right into gaming news of the week. And first up, Osiris Prime, what kind of news do you have for us this week?
All right, so yeah, I got a couple, three things here real quick. First two are kind of related. I got some ARK news. So first off, this is actually from a couple weeks ago. Wildcard, the studio that made ARK, they actually announced a spin-off game, which is kind of weird since the game hasn't officially released yet, either on PC or on the Xbox One or PS4 too. But they announced a new kind of spin-off game called ARK, Survival of the Fittest. And how they describe it is it's a multi-online survival arena game. So basically just a big kind of, I guess, deathmatchy, you know, kind of game where the there's actually going to be cash prizes, I guess, each month. They'll pick like the five best teams, I believe. Let me see here. Sorry. Each month it'll be the top 10 ranked players, or actually players, I guess, not just teams, for the month. And then within, I guess, there's going to be four modes of play, which I don't think they said what each mode is going to be here in this article. I'm reading from IGN. But there's going to be, supposedly from them, payouts of more than $50,000 in monthly cash prizes. So we'll see how that goes. But this was actually a total conversion mod for the game, I guess, that they picked up and, you know, kind of polished it up and are releasing it. So there's going to be 72 players on the official servers, and then on unofficial servers, there'll be 200 players that you can have going at it and against, you know, the environment, against other people, and something called evolution events, which I'm going to assume is probably some kind of big event, kind of like in Destiny, and I don't know if they have like level events in Division, maybe, but where, you know, there's something kind of going on, and you know, everybody can go and try to do it for, I guess, XP or bragging rights or whatever. But they didn't really describe what those evolution events are. But yeah, so this was announced for the PC. They didn't say anything about Xbox or PS4 yet, so we'll see if that's going to happen. Because for my next article, there's some controversy going on here. And originally, I got this from IGN, but I actually posted the Polygon article here because it has some more detail. But Trendy Entertainment, which the makers of Dungeon Defenders, which I'm not sure what that is. I've heard of it before, but I don't remember exactly what kind of game that is. They actually filed a lawsuit against Arc, or against Wildcard Studios, against one of their former employees, game designers, who's now part of Wildcard, Jeremy Steglitz, I believe is how you say his last name, for basically a breach of contract. So evidently he had left, and there was a, I guess he had like a year where he couldn't, you know, I guess basically make any games or anything, kind of like a non-compete clause in his departure. And I guess what they're saying is he basically broke that, and he, you know, started working on Ark well before his, you know, his year was up. And there's also some other details that on this article that I found, that which is why I posted it. His wife actually, let me see here if I could find it real quick. Sorry, his wife Susan registered forms for, you know, when he was going. Excuse me, when he was going to Wildcard Studio under her maiden name, which is Susan Browning, for whatever reason, which kind of doesn't make this whole situation look good, I guess. But according to the Polygon article, I guess from another different article on Kotaku that they had been following for a while, I guess this guy had some problems even in Trendy Entertainment, where there were some claims of just, you know, basically how he's running the place, and, you know, the workers under him are disgruntled, and there was some possibly like harassment, sexual harassment that was possibly going on. Nothing's been official yet on that part, but I'm assuming that's kind of one of the reasons he left. But now all of a sudden they're, you know, starting to trying to get back at him. Well, I don't know if they're trying to get back at him, but, you know, trying to get him now for a breach of contract. So I don't know. It's just kind of a big mess. But ultimately, if this goes through, then they're basically going to have to pull the game from at least sales. They didn't really mention in this article or a couple of other articles I had read if, like, the game itself might be totally shut down or not. But at least for, you know, if it goes through, then they're going to have to, you know, pull the game from sale, because potentially, if, you know, obviously if Trendy wins, it's, there, you know, there's gonna be problems. Obviously, if, you know, he's working on this game, and, you know, he was supposed to be not doing anything basically for gaming, you know, at the same time. And I guess they're claiming that he used some assets from, you know, Trendy Entertainment for Ark. So I guess if they win, maybe they can, you know, claim the game for themselves, supposedly. So I don't know. It's just kind of a big mess and kind of sad, because, you know, it's a really cool game. I've really enjoyed it. There's a lot of people out there on Steam and even on the Xbox One that, you know, have been buying up the game. So I don't know. What do you guys think of all this that's going on?
So, Gray, you do a little software development of a type, and I'm into software development. Does that not sound completely ridiculous to you as a non-compete clause to not be allowed to do any games development after working on one project?
Yeah, it does. And because usually that would mean you couldn't work, you wouldn't be able to feed yourself. It's, you know, non-competes typically can't deprive you of your living. So yeah, very, very odd. Very odd indeed.
Yeah, usually they need to be very, very specific. Like my non-compete clause with my company right now says that I can't go to work for any of their major competitors, and I can't do any work directly in that competitive product market space. But I wouldn't have a non-compete clause that would say I can't do anything in the electrical grid utility market. It's just that I can't do, like, a product that is specifically a competitor against my company's current products. So they're supposed to be very, very tight. That's just kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, it's almost like they're saying you can't work on any game at all. Well, you're a game designer, so then you can't live. Yeah, it just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I've heard of non-compete clauses before, but it's just, Yeah, it's really weird. And Wildcard kind of, you know, retorted saying, you know, these accusations obviously are false, and, you know, they're just, you know, trying to smear them and, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know what the real story is here. I guess maybe one day we'll find out, possibly. But I don't know. It's just kind of sad, you know, that this has to happen. But, I mean, if the guy actually did, you know, something, you know, wrong, he, you know, I guess he's going to have to pay for it, and potentially, you know, the game, I don't know. I don't think it was in this article, but in one of the other articles, excuse me, they were saying how somehow the game is like in something about the game being in competition, you know, with their assets or something like that. And as far as I know, I don't think Dungeon Defenders is like a survival game or anything like that. So I don't know what they're talking about as far as that goes. So I don't know.
So Dungeon Defenders is it's almost like a tower defense strategy game. I mean, it came out on almost everything, PCs. It was out on old consoles. It was on mobile devices. But I think the other piece is, having read about Dungeon Defenders and the company, when Dungeon Defenders 2 came out, which has been under development for a long time, they launched it, or they talked about it, announced it in one way, and then ended up going back to the drawing board. And there was some controversy within that company in terms of how the upper-level management, the owners, the founders of it, were spending the money. And so there were a number of controversies that came out in terms of workplace situations involving some of the founders. And so the company themselves has kind of a checkered history. And so, yeah, I wonder how much of this is a media play and a money grab in terms of, you know, rather than it would be an actual legal issue with the non-compete.
Craig, were you gonna say something?
Yeah, I was just gonna go. You know, another facet of this is the whole, I think in my mind, anyways, comes up as the, you know, what am I being paid to do for this company? You know, when they talk about, well, he took our assets and used it in somebody else's game. Well, that's definitely not good. I mean, that's definitely theft, just stealing digital assets that belong to one company and using them on another. However, that brings up the point of, you know, in the game industry, there seems to be a lot of this, you need to work 120 hours a week, and we're going to pay you for 40. And I just think that's disgusting. I think game companies need to pay, you know, people 40, 50 hours a week and then let them have a life after that. And I think what happens many times is you'll find these guys that are at work so late, they start working on other projects that are not company-owned, and everything starts getting really gray. And I think that wouldn't happen if these game companies didn't expect their employees to get paid for 40 and work for 120, which a whole different side of the story, which I think is probably underneath there somewhere. But that's all I was going to say, Prime.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard it. You know, you always hear stories about, you know, how people are always just getting basically like slave, not slave, but just, you know, work to the bone, and, you know, working all these crazy hours, and, you know, and obviously these, you know, these companies are pushing, you know, these tight deadlines sometimes. Although I guess lately, you know, they've kind of opened it up a little bit more, I guess. They've, you know, it was like a year or two before. Now they're, you know, going 3 and 4, maybe. Hopefully that, you know, that'll help out a little bit. I don't know if it is. I mean, I guess they still could be, you know, working, you know, crazy hours and stuff like that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. Any other comments on this? Okie dokie. So just the last article real quick. If I can find it here. Hold on a second. So obviously VR is a big thing nowadays, as DB announced at the beginning of the show, with Oculus releasing today or this week. So I came across this article on Destructoid talking about the PlayStation VR headset, and that one of the executive vice president, and I'm sorry if I butcher this name, Masayasu Ito, I'm gonna say, said that, you know, they have bigger plans for the headset, and potentially one day that it's going to come out to the PC, possibly. But right, you know, obviously right now they're focused on, you know, just getting out on their console on the PS4. But I don't know, what do you guys think of the PlayStation VR coming out to the PC? Do you think it could compete with Oculus or the Vive?
Does it have the same specs? I didn't think it did have as good of specs as Oculus or Vive, which I would say then if it doesn't have the same resolution and refresh rate, then I would say no, that's a losing proposition. So I don't know. I mean, I definitely think last article I read, and I think Sony even admitted that it wasn't on the same level as those others. So I just don't see it. What about you guys?
You know, the specs are lower, right? Because Oculus has two screens in the headset versus VR, which is one large screen. You know, and maybe it could. I'm sure a PC could run it, right? I mean that as we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, that Xbox and PlayStation are still built on what is essentially PC, you know, infrastructure, and so. I think it could run, but whether or not there's a market for that, or, you know, I think it may be a matter of kind of signaling and messaging to developers that the games that you're building for one platform or the other can work, or potentially could work across all VR platforms.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to check out any of these headsets at all. I'm actually hoping to get a look at the Oculus, possibly. Actually, we just opened a new library in our town, and they have like I guess what they're calling like a maker studio, where they have like the 3D printer and just other kind of stuff, and they have an Oculus in there too. So I want to try to get up there maybe one day, hopefully soon, and test it out, see how it is, and I can try to report back. I don't know. If anybody else has had a chance to check out any VR, even, you know, PlayStation, Oculus, anything like that. I think, Zeus, you said you had the Samsung Gear, I believe. I don't know if you had a chance to check that out.
I haven't had a chance yet. Yeah, I do. I pre-ordered my wife a Samsung Galaxy S7 for her birthday, and the deal they were running with that was you could get that with a free Gear VR. So I do have it. I set it up. I did the hardware setup tonight. I have not actually connected it to my Note 5 to check it out yet, though. The instruction manual is full. Is like nearly 30 pages of warnings information. So being presented with that, I found that quite daunting. So it took me longer to get it set up than I had planned.
Okay, I guess they got to cover themselves with all those warnings. So Zeus, if you want to run through your news stories.
Yep, absolutely. So I'll try to be quick with mine. First thing is Nathan Drake ponders the cost of treasure in Uncharted 4, a Thief's End trailer. So I found this on Lightning Gaming News. It's just, you know, a link to the YouTube video of the trailer. It looks pretty awesome, looks very dramatic. You know, nothing much to really report on it, just to say that I'm pretty excited. I think this might be the first time that I get on board with an Uncharted game right off the bat. I've been one of those people who's been like, I don't want to play the new game until I've played, like, everything before, but I'm just too far behind with Uncharted. I know the basic story, so I think I'm just going to get on board with this one right away. Have any of you guys watched this trailer or just been keeping up with Uncharted at all?
I haven't, because I don't know, I want it, but I can't buy it.
I watched the earlier trailer, I don't know, what was a couple of months ago, right? The one that had the Assassin's Creed art in it, in the background, is one of the paintings that had to be edited out of the trailer, concept art. But, no, I think the graphics look amazing, so I'll be interested to hear as it's coming out. Glad you're jumping on board.
No, I haven't seen, I didn't get a chance to watch the trailer, and I don't have a PS4. I never had a PS3, so I never kind of followed the story or the game.
Okay. And the second story was Super Data. Digital games generated $6.2 billion worldwide in February. So, now, what I found most interesting about this is just the simple fact that the marketing and sales guys have come to grips with tools that actually track digital sales. We went through so many years of where you know, we were tracking like the size of the PC gaming market and other sales, and but there was never a good read or feel with data on digital sales, and whoever these guys are, Super Data, not only do they have some tracking mechanism for digital sales, but they also have earnings information on free-to-play games, which has also been a thing that there's been a dearth of data on. So just coming out in the stats, you know, digital console sales, top five were, some of the top five were Call of Duty, Black Ops 3, Grand Theft Auto 5 still selling well, Madden NFL 16 and Fallout 4. On the PC, Counter-Strike Global Offense, StarCraft 2, Rise of the Tomb Raider is the only really new game up in that list, other than Fallout 4. It hasn't been too long since that released. And then in free-to-play, League of Legends, World of Tanks, and Dota 2. And that is all that I have for news.
You know, it's always amazing how many older games still sell and sell and sell continuously. Digital downloads, that's pretty amazing. It reminds me of when Myst was still selling for years and years after it came out. Some games just have legs.
Yeah, I contributed to the Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto on the console at least.
Well, for my news, I really, you know, our third topic here we're going to be moving into is VR, and as mentioned earlier by the guys, you know, we have the Oculus launching today, and some reviews of the system are up, many others are pending, and you know, I guess after watching those reviews and listening to those reviews, my news is, I really want to play Oculus. I really want to play Eve Valkyrie. It looks awesome. And I think I even more want to play Adrift, because after reading an article, one of the reviewers saying he really kind of got a little sick with Adrift. I'm like, that game, I would be so good for that game. I really love sci-fi, space, type of novels, and you know, Star Trek, Star Wars, you know, all of that. And I just think I would love a you know, weightless simulator, and it would be a blast. So I will go ahead and kick it off. Let's roll into segment three and talk about VR. Not a lot of reviews out yet on the Oculus. Everything I've seen has said that it feels like it's well made, it's quality. The earphones work well. You know, you can take them off if you want to put a quality set of headphones on, but they all said they sounded good, and so far, very, very positive. So, what do you guys think about VR?
So, earlier today, I was watching on GiantBomb.com. They were streaming VR, which was, Zeus, this is kind of an interesting tech setup, right? Like, a site that streams games or does quick looks, how to capture that. So they had, I'd missed their setup, but they were capturing the majority of the screen inside the headset in addition to, you know, a camera within their studio. But it was really interesting. They played a couple of kind of the interactive pieces, and then they were playing almost what looked like a mech RTS, and kind of talking it through and seeing how that the interface was. And at one point in time, they had, this is the, I guess, the fun part about streaming on the day of, right? They had some questions about PvP or not getting into a multiplayer match, and they ended up hooking up with Palmer Luckey via Twitter, and he joined their stream and played the match with them along with another one of the developers, and they were getting some lag, and so they were talking about how they were getting lag, and it was related to the way that their setup was for capturing versus the servers. But it was an interesting kind of, you know, watching this, you know, RTS, talking about Supreme Commander, right, this RTS type of strategy game with virtual representations of individuals someplace else inside the game world, which was really interesting. So So it was kind of fun to see initially some of those big pieces, or some of the games and experiences. One of my questions that I want to throw out as well is, you know, Gray, you're looking at some of those so cool space sims like Eve. You know, I think that looks really cool. My concern, seeing some of the things that came out of GDC, were there seems to be a lot more interactive experiences versus kind of a full-on game. So that's, I think that's one of my concerns as far as how this market develops, but I'm glad to kind of watch it develop.
Yeah, so I was reading some of the, I think it was the IGN article on just kind of their brief review, or not review, but their just kind of impressions, because I think they're going to have a review later in the week about it. Just kind of echoing some of what Gray said, and I guess it doesn't, there's supposed to be like motion tracking controllers that are eventually going to come out, but for now I guess it just comes with the 360 controller, so that was kind of one of their gripes, I guess, about it, that, you know, they have the headset on, but then you still just have the normal controller in your hand. So that kind of pulled them out, I guess, a little bit from some of the games that they were playing. But otherwise, you know, like they said, you know, it felt really good. You can, they're just a stock headset was, you know, they work fine. You can kind of move them around. I was kind of watching the video where you can, you know, pull them, you know, up or down, back and forth, and even kind of, they tilt out a little bit. And like Gray said, you can remove them and, you know, just plug in your own, you know, headphones and stuff like that. So yeah, it's like I said, I definitely want to try to get to my library so I can, you know, test it out and see kind of how it all works out and see what it's all about.
Yeah, I can see the I don't know, I wouldn't say frustration, but you know, the concern that it maybe doesn't add that much. I'm watching a video right now because I want to talk about the games that are available at launch a little bit. I'm watching Project Cars, which you guys know is a favorite game of mine. Played with a VR headset from the in-cockpit view, and it's pretty amazing. And I don't know if this is actual, you know, headset cam video, but but just the notion of being able to play a racing sim, you know, something like Forza in a VR headset, which I guess I would hope at a minimum you just get more immersion and feel for the game. Still seems like a pretty awesome premise. I don't know if it's $599 awesome, but, you know, I guess there's a price if you're going to adopt early and check this stuff out with the hope of, you know, kind of like when you buy a phone today, right? You buy it hoping it'll be one thing, or maybe it's more analogous to the Xbox 360. You know, when we all bought that, you know, it was one thing, right? But at the end of, you know, 5 years or the 8-year life cycle, it was a pretty incredible box that had a lot more baked into it via software than what we purchased originally. So I guess maybe that's the hope of VR.
Yeah, you make a good point there. You know, I'm kind of wondering, one of the problems, I love the in-cockpit view of Project Cars and Forza, but it just leaves, you know, with the screen being, you know, 6 to 10 feet away from you, and it just leaves so little for actually the see of the road. So I'm wondering if VR would kind of correct that, where you could actually have the in-cockpit view, but still have most of the screen being the road that you're looking at, unless you tilted your head up to look at the mirror, or to the left to look at the mirror, or really, you know, looked all the way to the left to see if somebody's on the side of you. I mean, that would be, especially if it's very responsive, that could be huge in a racing game. But, you know, I was watching the, you know, Solar Races X Car Club Top 5, and, you know, it's common when you're playing those games, you're going to keep toggling to your rear view or your side view, so, you know, but you have to do it quickly, because, you know, it's just not intuitive to have your entire view shift from being forward to being left to being backwards. So, yeah, very interested. Can you get any sense, Zeus, from that video you're watching, whether they're getting more field of view outside of the dashboard by having it in the VR?
It's tough to tell that, but I can definitely say that it looks like you will just be more... It's going to be a more accurate sense and feel of actually being in the cockpit, right? Of just like you said, you know, being able to turn your head and see things on the road, really being able to look into a turn, which is a big thing. that it's tough to do, you know, to look into a turn in one of these racing games. Like, you tilt your head and you force your eyes to move in that direction, but it's just not the same as actually, you know, fully tracking through that field of view to do a look into the turn. So, I don't know, my hope would be that it would feel more immersive, and my hope would be that you would drive better.
So, with the as far as the games, I don't know if you guys, like, now, with just regular Xbox and PS and PC games, if you rely on reviews at all, but something like this, you would kind of think it would, you might need to rely more heavily on reviewers, just because it's such a different experience. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I'm hoping that the game reviews get written like they do now, where the review is about the game. Because I guess with VR, you are right. If you want to hedge your risk, first and foremost, you just want to know that it's a good, solid game, right? VR or not. And then that the paragraph or two about the VR edition is just an extra section that's covered, kind of like, you know, where you know, reviews cover the single player, and then they cover the multiplayer, and then they cover any, like, special controller or other, like, special experiences in the game. I hope it's that, like, tack-on content to a review, but that they focus on whether or not it's a solid game. And to a certain extent, that's the thing that interests me in terms of the library. Like, so I have Project Cars, right? That's an investment I've already made. If more games, maybe, that I already own just become VR-enabled, then it makes it feel like it's more worth the investment.
That's a good point. I think I'm just so frugal that I can't help but, even for, you know, even not even for a major purchase, but definitely for a major purchase, really look at the reviews hard and from trusted sources and compare what they have to say, and then give it some time to digest, because, you know, $600 on a piece of gaming equipment is expensive. Unlike a television, which you may spend $600 or $1,000 on or more. I mean, that's a whole family entertainment system. You can watch movies on it. The whole family will make use of it. But, you know, this is a pretty specific piece of equipment. So I think really what the reviewers have to say is going to be important for many gamers like myself, who are, you know, just want to make sure they're not buying a lemon, you know? I think we've all bought a lemon before, so.
Yeah, and I kind of look at that like I look at it from the perspective of the long game, right? I mean, my hope is if I buy an Oculus and I pay the $599, you know, I paid money for wheel and pedals. I paid money for this SciTech X25 flight control system, right? And I've had it for probably going on a decade, and I use it, and I reuse it, and I get a new PC, and I still use the joystick. So I kind of look at it like that from a gaming peripheral standpoint. My hope is I buy it and I'm able to use it for a very long time, and I don't need to worry about, you know, upgrading to an Oculus Rift 2, you know, anytime, let's say this console generation.
And I think that's where, you know, refresh rate and resolution are a big part. You know, one of the concerns I had, I think it was with the IGN, or it could have been one of the other articles, was they say you really can notice the pixels, and I think that would really bother me if I could see the pixels. So, you know, what is the cost to jump on now, or the cost to wait 2 years and get the new one that's 4K? I don't, you know, you kind of got to weigh that in there as well, right?
And I wonder too. I mean, I think the challenge with this is how to capture that experience, how to share that experience, whether it's simply just as Prime, you're saying, it's another way to view that, or, you know, what you're talking about, Zeus, is in a review, if it just becomes the add-on piece about what the game provides from a VR experience. But it almost, to me, it feels like, I wonder if this is, you know, 10 years ago with trying to put the Wii controller in somebody's hand to help them see the value of it. Granted, that was a, what, $250 investment versus a $600 investment? But it seems like the best way to sell it is the experience. And talking about it is one thing, but getting it into a demo kiosk at a store with, you know, maybe the best way to help make this mainstream, but it's still, like you're talking about, Gray, it's still a really big price tag, and it's not just an impulse buy purchase at this stage yet.
Yeah, that's just the headset, and you obviously gotta have a PC that can run this too. So you gotta add that price on there too.
Yeah, this is definitely. I mean, as far as the Oculus is, it's definitely something that I only buy if I've already made the investment in the stuff that makes it work, right? Like, I'm not gonna buy a new PC for this, but when it does come time to buy a new PC, maybe I make absolutely certain that PC has the specs, you know, to run this. You know, and I'm looking at the specs now, and we've been talking about this back and forth on the Geeks Worldwide website and the hardware group. You know, the video card requirements are a GTX 970 or an AMD R9 290. I have some things that are pretty close to that. I guess what I'm curious to see, and I'm going to run a bunch of these tests on my gaming PCs tonight to see what I have that might work with it. The CPU requirements and RAM requirements aren't really much of anything. It's an Intel Core i5, and the memory is just 8 gigs of RAM. So, you know, it's fairly mid-level spec CPU and memory wise. It's the graphics card, and you know, and if you've got a desktop, then you're just talking about again targeting a 970 or above whenever you make your next video card upgrade.
Yeah, definitely. Go ahead, DB.
Oh, I was just going to say, so I work, as Prime was talking about, having a makerspace at a library, so I work at a college campus, and one of our summer research projects is involving demoing and building around with some VR software. So we've got one pre-ordered, and I'm kind of eager to see when we get it. But at the same time, for me, it seems like there's a rationale there in terms of a larger group of people being able to use that versus a $600 potential future experience, right? I think, Zeus, your comments in terms of this is something that's going to stick for a while, I hope that's true, that it's as people are investing in this, that it is an experience, it is a piece of hardware like your a good steering wheel or flight stick is going to be around for a while.
I just see the difference being, 4K, we know that's where everything's going. It's going to take longer than I think the consumer electronics companies want it to happen. But I think as many of the theaters seem to have 4K in the theaters, I think, 8K and anything above that is probably many, many years. And I think, we see everybody wanting to go to 4K. Netflix already has 4K. And I just think all these VRs, because of the state of computers and consoles today, aren't able to deliver a 4K experience. But if that experience is 3 years down the road, is now the time to jump in. And so, it'll be very interesting. It's going to be an interesting journey over the next couple of years to watch VR and see what comes of it.
Yeah, we got, I think the Vive is coming out soon too, isn't it? Is it this month April, I should say, or May?
Very soon, yeah, we talked about that recently.
Okay, yeah, and PlayStation, I don't think they've actually said exactly, just sometime this year, probably.
October-ish?
I would assume. Is it October? Okay, I wasn't sure. I know, probably at the end of the year, most likely sometime.
Yeah, there was a story today that there'll be an announcement about the PS4.5 before the launch of the PSVR. And my gut feeling after reading that was the 4.5 is basically going to be the PlayStation that doesn't require that external box. They're just going to release a new PlayStation that doesn't require an external box with the PSVR. And so when you buy a bundle with a PS4 and the PSVR, you'll get the new PS4 that doesn't have that external box, has more GPU and CPU capabilities. But that's what I read today.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that makes sense that they want to get some a little beefier out there.
So just for a kick, I do want to take a quick, hopefully 30 seconds, and read some of these warning messages in the Gear VR headset, if that's okay.
Go for it.
That's pretty comical. So right off the bat, first page after the table of contents warning, this product contains chemicals known to the state of California to cause cancer, birth defects, or other reproductive harm. So I thought that was pretty funny.
That's good.
For the safest experience, remain seated or stationary when using the Gear VR. Take special care to ensure that you are not near other people, objects, stairs, balconies, windows, furniture, or other items that you could bump into or knock down when using or immediately after using the Gear VR. Do not handle sharp or otherwise dangerous objects while using the Gear VR. Never wear the Gear VR in situations that require attention, such as walking, bicycling, or driving. When you are not wearing the Gear VR, do not place objects on the Gear VR's proximity sensor. Oh, that's not a good one. So yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Not playing with sharp objects and not wearing the Gear VR while walking, bicycling, or driving, I thought was pretty funny.
I'll say within 3 days we'll get a video of somebody on a bike.
You know, it's funny, that first one, I went to buy a coffee cup, an extra large coffee cup on Amazon, and it said this is known to contain chemicals that cause cancer, and this, as said by the state of California. I'm like, oh, I'm not buying that coffee cup. Who would buy something you drink out of that had that? And now they're selling something that you put on your head that causes cancer. What is the world coming to?
Yeah, and I can't find it right now, but there's another one in here that I thought was funny. Was about the fact that the phone may get hot, and so not to wear the Gear VR such that you may burn your face.
Ow.
See, Gray, you're thinking of it all serious, and all I can think about is the old Saturday Night Live skit with Happy Funball, where do not taunt Happy Funball. Do not look directly at Happy Funball. If Happy Funball starts to glow, run away.
I especially like the one with the sharp objects. Do not handle sharp objects and knives and axes and saws when you're wearing your VR, you know, Gear VR. That's great. Good advice, yeah.
Yeah, that's a video that I can definitely see, like you were mentioning, Prime, about like somebody handling like a sword or something while they're playing like a hack and slash game in VR.
We don't recommend you juggle chainsaws while they're running while wearing the Gear VR.
I'm sure we'll get a video within the first week or two of, you know, somebody breaking their monitor or TV or something because they're, you know, up and around, you know, doing whatever.
Oh, like the guys drawing the Wiimotes at the TVs?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's your sign. Well, guys, anything else? I'm looking at the time here. Anything else you want to cover on VR before we wrap up the show?
No, I'm good. I think we exhausted anything new that's been out about it.
Nope, yeah, I think we're good until, you know, we get some of the other ones that start to come out. We can kind of compare and see how everything's doing.
Well, with that, we'll call it a show. Thank you guys for joining again, and thank all you out there for listening. On behalf of DBQ Hams, Osiris Prime, Zeus Adamus, and myself, Greylock3491, I want to thank you for listening, and until the next time we talk, peace.